Welcome to Preheated, kitchen wisdom and friendly chat from two friends who love to bake. I'm Stefan Cohn.
And I'm Andrea Ballard.
Every week we celebrate the successes, failures, learning, and laughs that go hand in hand with baking for those we love. On today's show, we're continuing our celebration of National Cake Month with a delicious cranberry upside down cake that will be perfect for your Thanksgiving dessert buffet. We're also going to recap our pumpkin bundt cake from last week, talk about the different ways we collect and store our massive recipe collections, and remind you that it's time to start your homemade eggnog, our first delicious challenge. So pour yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for some sweet talk.
Stefan.
Hey, Andrea.
How are you?
I'm so good. Fall is one of my favorite seasons, and it just is feeling super cozy, and, you know, I'm loving it, so.
Me too. I love it when you actually feel good about having your oven on for a couple of hours inside the house to warm things up.
Not that it stops me in the heat of summer, but it definitely feels better this time of year, for sure.
Definitely. So who are you baking for this week, or what special is happening?
This is a bit of a quieter week. I have some friends coming over and things of that nature, but this will be a more typical baking week for me, and things that I normally bake. I usually do a big batch of breakfast muffins for my kids who love a banana chocolate chip muffin, I use a little whole wheat flour, so I feel a little less guilty about giving them cake for breakfast.
And bananas.
And bananas.
Fruit and
come on. And an egg. There's one egg, so.
There you go. You're hitting all the important food groups.
I usually also make an Irish soda bread that's really healthful on the kind of other end of that spectrum. My husband and I like to eat that for breakfast. It's a whole wheat soda bread that also has wheat germ and steel cut oats in it and buttermilk. And I've talked previously about my abiding love for buttermilk. Irish soda bread is really easy. It's a quick bread and it's really delicious. So I usually do a loaf of that during the week. And then I'll just do one bigger dessert just to eat sometime throughout the week. And so it will be our cranberry cake that we're going to talk about in a minute for me.
Great. Well, do you slather the soda bread with that super high fat butter, like the Plugra or one of those other high fat butters?
I mean, who are you talking to? Yes, of course I do.
I just wanted to check in. I mean, I had
Hello,
a feeling.
Hello, my name's Stefan Cohn. Have we met? yeah, and in fact, to keep it thematic, the Irish butter is just so phenomenal. And it does, again, have that high butter fat content. And another thing that's also equally delicious, well, maybe not equally delicious, but a bit healthier, is some like natural almond butter. I find that really good. Or even just peanut butter. If you're a nut butter person, that's really tasty. So
Yummy.
How about you, Andrea? What's going on this week?
I have a friend hosting a Friendsgiving.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Super fun. For those of you who haven't heard of it, it's basically a Thanksgiving meal for your friends, hence the name Friendsgiving. And she reached out to me and asked me if I could bake a pie. So, of course, I said yes. I haven't yet decided what I'm going to do, but I usually bake a pecan pie. Mm. And I read recently about a particular type of cane syrup from Louisiana that's called Steen's. And I contacted my mom, who lives down there, and she has grabbed me a couple of cans. So I might try baking a pecan pie with this new Steen syrup instead of, I traditionally just use the Karo syrup.
Sure. Well, so what's supposed to be different about this brand?
I don't really know. I think the fact that it's from the sugarcane in Louisiana, so in my head, it's a little more authentic than the Karo syrup that I feel like comes from a factory, but I could be wrong about that.
It's just so cool to use something from your hometown, too.
Right.
And it sounds like maybe a small batch type of operation as opposed to a bigger industrial operation, too.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. A little bit harder to find and a little more localized. So I'm excited about trying it.
That sounds awesome. And, you know, for listeners who may not know this, Andrea is a pie expert. She goes to pie camp. I mean, this is a thing. This is her passion. So when she is telling you about her pecan pie, you'd better perk up your ears and listen. So I can't wait to hear your update on this syrup. Exciting.
I will let you know.
What else is, what are you loving this week that's not necessarily baking related?
Well, I think the other thing I'm loving is cookbooks. This is a great time of year, I think, for the holidays. It seems like a lot of people come out with new cookbooks. Yeah. And speaking of pie camp, my pie guru, Kate McDermott, she runs a business called The Art of the Pie, and her cookbook was recently published called The Art of the Pie. And I got it when it came hot off the presses, and I flipped through it, and it's just absolutely beautiful. There's gorgeous pictures. But what's really speaking to me in her book is her writing. And it truly is a book just not about baking, but about what you can learn about life from baking.
Oh, and I love that. That's our philosophy too.
It is. Real words of wisdom in her writing. So we'll post a link on our website in our episode 2 show sheet so you can check out The Art of the Pie. I really highly recommend it for yourself as a holiday gift or for any of your friends who either want to learn how to bake pies or want to take their pie baking to the next level.
That's a great holiday buying gift guide tip there too. Thank you. I tend to gift a lot of cookbooks and I love receiving them also. So, which is going to tie into something we're talking about in a minute here, which is kind of our recipe collections. Nice.
Yes. How about you? What are you loving this week?
Well, I'm loving my newly arrived King Arthur Flour catalog. And for those of you who may not know, King Arthur Flour is a East Coast company. They've been around forever. And they send a catalog that's more like a little magazine every few weeks. And if you're not on their mailing list, you know, not that they need any further promotion from little old me, but go and get on the mailing list. I really love this catalog because in addition to all the awesome products and gear you can buy from them, they do a great job of including recipes in their catalog. And the one that I have a birthday this month and I think I found the birthday cake. It is a chocolate macaroon bundt cake. And so if you can picture a deep, dark chocolate cake, but then with the kind of classic tunnel of fudge, you know, that old kind of 1970s tunnel of fudge. But instead, in this cake, the tunnel of fudge is not fudge. It's a huge gooey macaroon. I mean, this for my husband who is listening right now, it's page 47, babe. So that looks like the one.
Hint, hint.
They also have, and since we're going to be talking about the pumpkin bundt that we baked this week, they have this great gadget that I have not seen before, and it's kind of like a glorified muffin tin, but instead of the muffin cups, it's little bundts, and so it's four, and they're all attached into one pan, and they all have the different patterns. So you know, some crenellations, some just kind of bubbles there. It's really pretty. And I thought, what a great idea for, you know, maybe upcoming holiday baking you might be doing. Looks to me like you could take one batch of cake and make these four kind of minis.
Okay.
They're not like individuals, I would say. They're maybe like a 2 or 3 serving bundt or me on a bad day, just like one whole cake. But yeah, I love this. So again, that's just the King Arthur Flour catalog, and it just appeared in my mailbox this week. So it's likely out there for other listeners.
Okay, I have a few questions. Number one, yes. I get something from King Arthur. I order online from their website called Sift, and it's a monthly or maybe bi-monthly magazine, and it has a lot of recipes. The catalog is different from Sift?
I've not heard of Sift. What is this Sift you speak of? Wow. No, that sounds like maybe something a little extra. This is definitely a catalog, a mail order catalog.
You don't pay for the catalog.
Correct. No, it's just showing up. Yes.
Okay. Sift is definitely a purchase. I think it was $10 or $12. Well worth it. Highly recommend it. We'll post a link to it on our website. So I will look into the catalog. And then when you were talking about your mini pans, you used a word like crenellation or what the heck is that?
Oh, I think that's just a fancy word for if you think of a bundt pan, it's not smooth. It has some kind of designs.
Oh,
And so
the
when you,
waves and the curves.
exactly. And so when you turn the cake out, part of the beauty of the bundt, if you've used your baker's joy, then you're gonna get a clean release, and then the cake is pretty. And so that's in this particular product,
I
they all
see.
have a different design. So you would get four
Oh,
different
how
cakes.
cute. Okay, I'm
It's
getting it
really
now.
cute.
I think you'll have to take a picture of this one and post it as well because this sounds like something that would look even better than describing it.
Let's link to it. Good idea. Yeah. That's a really nice segue into talking about our pumpkin bundt cake, which was the cake we spent our first episode talking about, and then we spent some time making it. So,
Yes.
I mean, I have so many words of praise for the delicious pumpkin bundt. Were you loving it as well, Andrea?
Oh, absolutely. I have a huge thank you to Danielle over at Cozy Cakes Cottage for her recipe. It was my first cake I've baked in 10 years, perhaps. I do
My
believe the last cake I
gosh.
baked was for my daughter's first birthday. That was a bit of a disaster, so we'll talk about that later. But I thought it was super easy to put together. Her website even had a video, so I was able to go and look at the video, which if you haven't done a cake in a while, it's kind of nice to be able to look at someone else doing it because you'll read things like until they're cream the butter and sugar until it's light and fluffy, or do this until it's well moistened and mixed in. And it's nice to visually see, well, what does that look like? What does that mean? I was thrilled with the flavor. I did run into a bit of a problem, and I think this is just due to my lack of experience. I checked it at 40 minutes, as the instructions said, and I put the toothpick in, and the toothpick came out clean. And so I thought, well, that means it's done. But there was a part of me that I just knew it wasn't done, and I'm really annoyed at myself that I didn't listen to myself because it was still a bit, what should I say, wobbly on top. I just felt like it had a little bit of movement. I could tell as I was pulling it out of the oven. And since I wasn't confident enough in my cake baking skills, I didn't put it back in the oven for another 5 or 10 minutes that I think it needed. So when I did slice it up, the flavor has not been compromised, but there is a thin ridge running through it of unbaked pumpkin. It's almost a little bit of a pumpkin pudding, which adds a great level of moistness, I would say.
And I find that can be a challenge with especially something like a pumpkin cake or maybe like an applesauce cake or a zucchini cake, that there's a kind of a thin line between really wanting to retain that moistness that makes these cakes so delicious and downright undercooked. And I had the same issue. I checked it at 40 as the recipe instructed, and it was done very close to the funnel part of the pan. But when I walked out the toothpick closer to the edges, it was not. So I did put it back in, and it was that extra 5 minutes that did it. And I think the texture and the doneness was perfect at 45. So again, I'd check it at 40. Everybody's oven is a little bit different, but be sure to, when you test, kind of test in various places. That's maybe also a help.
That is a help. I did not know that. I just plunged my toothpick in one part and
It.
it came out clean. So I thought,
I
okay,
mean, also
done.
you raise a terrific point, which is trust your instincts. So true in life, also in baking. You didn't think the cake was done and it wasn't.
It's so true. And I've gotten to that point with my pies. I've now baked enough that I really trust myself. And I always remember Kate McDermott's advice, which she often says when you're baking, if you're asking the question, that usually means you know the answer. And so as I plunged that toothpick in and it came out clean, and I said to myself, I wonder if this really is done. I knew it wasn't, but I thought, well, there's no crumbs, and the recipe says that there's no crumbs, so it must be done.
What wise words. I think I may have to embroider that on a little pillow or needlepoint that. That's if you're asking the question, you know the answer. That is, wow.
That's right. Because every time she was watching me do my pie crust when I was at pie camp, and I would say, does this need more water? She would look at me and say, if you're asking the question, you probably know the answer. And it's true.
I mean, I
It's
wasn't
true.
expecting to get so philosophical here in only episode two, but
life, Stefan. Baking is life.
Absolutely. And so the life lesson that I learned also from this cake is my new undying love for Baker's Joy.
Oh, yes. I did not manage to get to the store to get any of that. So I used just a regular cooking spray, and then I floured the pan. And I had no stick, but I did not use the crenellated. Did you see how I slipped that in?
That was really nice.
Thank you.
Good job with your vocabulary.
Yeah, I just had that straight-sided tube pan. So that's right. I didn't have really anything for it to stick to anyway.
That's right. So as we talked a bit about last week, I do have a bundt pan that has the designs and have never, hear my words, never been able to get a clean release on that pan, no matter what I do. Mm. And why I have never used this magic product, I don't know.
Perhaps fear of the chemicals that may be involved.
So I was a bit taken aback because as you spray it, and again, for listeners who may not know this product, it's like Pam cooking spray with the addition of flour. And don't ask me how they get the flour in the can, but they do. And so then you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. You grease and flour with this product at the same time. And I was a bit taken aback because it reminded me very much of that snow in a can. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, like you put on your windows of your house.
Yes, which is like 100% toxic. And so I did have a moment pause, and then I thought, how often do I make a bundt pan, a bundt cake? I think I you know, for the experiment and for the learning here, we're going to take one for the team.
Right.
I had the best success. I read the instructions. I followed the instructions to leave the cake in the pan to cool for 10 minutes. And the cake literally came out of my pan so easily that I was unprepared. It was shocking to me. And I still had my hot pad underneath. So now I have the delicious problem of the cake's completely out beautifully. Like I took a picture of the pan and you can't even tell there was a cake in there. That's how clean.
Oh my gosh.
But now I have the hot pad underneath the cake.
You don't have your cake plate
and ready. I'm thinking, like, I can't let it, it can't be ruined at this point from my hot pad. So I call my daughter in and we kind of, you know, pull it back onto the cooling rack, and then I pull the pad out, and then we kind of re-invert it again. And anyway, crisis averted. But whatever magic, whoever the magicians are at Baker's Joy, you have I have lifelong
a new devoted fan.
I think that, you know, I just think this recipe was so well done, and kudos to Danielle at Cozy Cakes Cottage. It's moist. The cream cheese was fantastic. I, in fact, thought the recipe for the frosting made a little much. So I have some extra cream cheese frosting in my fridge right now, which is not a bad thing.
And that was a really good thing I learned from watching her video. She mentioned that the cream cheese frosting would be too much for the cake, and you could cut it in half. So I did cut it in half, and I still had some left over. But I don't know about you. Whenever I'm in the airport and I go by a Cinnabon and they have those little containers of frosting, I would never buy that, you know, right before I get on a plane, but I desperately want it. And now I have that in my own refrigerator. I'm so excited.
For, let's be honest, much less than you would pay at any airport.
That's right.
Pennies on the dollar. I loved this recipe, and I have a deep and abiding passion for cakes that get stored in the fridge and just take on a very kind of cold and dense consistency. Mm. And this cake,
yes,
is also one that has just gotten better with time. And just having it, you know, it was delicious hot out of the oven. I could hardly wait. It was, you know, it's been only better in the few days that it's been sitting in my fridge, and I'm just hacking off slabs of it whenever I pass by.
But that's so important to know, because sometimes I don't bake something because I think, well, I can't, you know, I have a family of three. We can't plow through this quickly enough and it's going to go bad. So knowing that that's a cake that keeps well is actually really helpful.
And I think that goes back to the moistness as well. So I'm so happy that we chose Danielle and her site, Cozy Cakes Cottage, for our first recipe out of the gate. Definitely, this is a lady who knows what she's doing, so we encourage you to check out her other delicious things on her site.
Yes, indeed. Let's shift over and start talking about our recipe collections. I know that, Stefan, you and I both love cookbooks. We also look at recipes on the internet. I mean, who doesn't these days? Pinterest and Instagram and other places like that are just some fabulous sources of new recipes. Maybe an old-fashioned binder might come into play. I love and collect vintage kitchenware. So I often see the old tin metal recipe holders, and my favorite thing is when you open them up and they actually have cards in them with handwriting. And
I don't know what you're talking about. What are these?
Maybe I can't think of the word. It's a little tin box. And it holds index cards of recipes.
Yes. All right. Mine is wooden. So
Okay. Well, if you go in the thrift stores, I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there are wooden ones, but I tend to see the tin ones most often.
Okay. So just a recipe card box.
Yes. And it's so exciting for me when I open that up and there's actual recipe cards in it with people's handwriting, or even if it's things clipped out from the newspaper, you'll see their little notes and, you know, Bob loves this, serve this Thanksgiving.
I absolutely
love it. So tell me, how do you store your recipes? What's your go-to method?
Well, I feel like I could have invented Pinterest, and I'm sure. Because for years and years and years, it's essentially what I did. I would tear things. I'm a rabid magazine reader and have been my whole life. And so I get many, many recipes from magazines. And so I constantly have these tear sheets just floating around my house. And now I'm just able to go, you know, take that magazine over to the computer, look up the recipe, and pin it to my bulletin board. So I love that. There are certain recipes that either aren't there, or for one reason or another, I do still have the physical recipe. And I keep a pretty extensive filing system in my kitchen that's labeled by theme. And I have recipes that I want to try. And then the other side of that is I have recipes I've made and would make again. If I wouldn't make it again, then it gets tossed. And those are all in big binders. And I've had to split them up at this point because they won't fit in one binder anymore. And then I just make a notation every time I make that recipe also. And then I can tell kind of at a glance if there's something I've only made once back in 2003, you know, real estate's kind of getting precious. So I'll toss that one.
Right. That sounds like a great system.
So I'm like you as well, though. I love coming across, you know, scribbled notes or vintage cookbooks, recipes, and then you come across somebody's notes from a meal or when they made it. And I love that sense of continuity and community.
Me too. My system is also the binder system. So I have one binder. I cull through it quite frequently and get rid of things. And the way I kind of judge, I'm not as good as you are about noting when I cook something. But if a recipe is really dirty and has food stains on it, that's how I usually know.
Well,
that
used.
I've used it.
Yes.
Used it quite a bit. If it's pristine white paper that never looks smudged or burned or has any spills on it, then I probably didn't use it very much. And recently I found an app that I actually use and love so much. It's called AnyList. I didn't buy it for recipes. I originally bought it because I was having trouble kind of keeping my to-do list system and, you know, do I keep it in my phone? Do I keep it on a post-it note? Do I keep it in my purse? And so I got this AnyList. I can't remember if it was free or maybe I paid a few dollars, but if I did pay a few dollars, it is well worth it.
Okay.
Because the thing that they have that is so helpful to me is they have an integration with recipes. And that might be the paid upgrade piece that I got. What I can do is, let's say, I love cookbooks. So let's say I bought a new cookbook. I'm reading a recipe. It sounds fabulous. I'll go to the internet and look that recipe up, and you can usually find them posted somewhere. And then from my phone or from my computer, I can press a little button that says send this recipe to AnyList. And it moves it over to AnyList, puts it in my recipe collection, and then it pops up all the ingredients, and I can just press the ones that I need to add to my grocery list. And so when I hit the grocery store, I'm ready. And the fabulous thing is in your grocery list, so let's say on my grocery list it says milk, eggs, cheese, it will also indicate if it's something that I need for a recipe. So it would say 3 eggs needed for pumpkin spice bundt cake. So that if I'm at the grocery store and I think to myself, oh wait, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to make that, I don't need to think, well, wait, what did I need those eggs for? Did I need eggs because I'm out of eggs, or did I need eggs for this recipe? So any list, I highly recommend it. It works with Macs. It works with regular PCs. It works on your phone. It is a lifesaver for me.
I think we are clearly representing the spectrum of technology here. I have... I'm ripping things out of magazines and you are having your phone talk to you about the eggs needed for your recipe. So,
that reminds me, it's also integrated with Siri. So I can say to my iPhone, Siri, add eggs to my grocery list, and it just pops right in.
So we have that with our Amazon Alexa, which is also known as the Echo. Yes. Okay. So I do make my grocery list that way, which is amazing. But this is great. I'm going to have to check out this new technology. So.
Well, and I just think it's figuring out whatever works for you and not giving up the first time you try something. I tried keeping track of things on Pinterest, and I just got easily overwhelmed. There was just too much that I liked. And same thing with ripping things out of magazines. There was just all of it looked so good, you know. And so it just really works better for me to have my collections be things that I've – not just that I want to make. My collections are all things that I've actually made. So I'll either rip it out and print it for my binder, or I'll put it into my any list and make it. But I don't have things in either collection that are just recipes that I might make someday. They're all things that I've actually made.
So not necessarily aspirational. Yes, mine is more a wish list. So
definitely not aspirational. And in fact, if the recipe was a fail and not through my own fault, but I just thought it wasn't a good recipe, I'll delete it. I'll rip it out of the binder, or I'll go into any list and delete the recipe.
Yeah, no, there's no reason to keep those around.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our cranberry upside down cake, which we're hoping will be one of those recipes we're going to turn to again and again. And this recipe is from a site called simplyrecipes.com, and it's credited to Elise Bauer. This is a wonderful site. She has a bunch of great recipes. And this, you know, cranberries, it's that time of year for cranberries. It's a very Thanksgiving and November-ish fruit. But we wanted to try a simple cake that incorporated this the similar way that our bundt cake was a cake that was a pretty cake. You know, upside down cakes are usually gorgeous as well. This is a fairly simple cake base, but then it has almost caramely cranberry topping. So that's what we're going to be baking this week. And we hope you do that along with us. A reminder that we'll post this recipe to our Facebook and Pinterest, and also on our website, which is preheatedpodcast.com.
The picture you sent me looked absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to make this cake. And remind me, or actually educate me really quickly, why is it called an upside down cake?
Well, Andrea.
For those of us who are cake novices.
Right. And so the kind of the classic upside down cake that most people would think of would be a pineapple upside down cake. And really all it means, and you can use a variety of fruits or other things on the upside down portion, you're going to layer that cake in almost backwards. And so the bottom of the cake pan will be covered, in this case, with a cranberry caramel mixture and butter. Mm. And then you're going to put the raw batter on top of that cake and bake it. And when it comes out of the oven, you will invert it. So if you think about maybe like a sticky roll or a cinnamon roll, something that you're going to turn upside down, and then you're going to have all that luscious and gooey cranberry and caramel kind of, you know, decorating the top of the cake. This is not a cake you would frost.
Got it.
Need really any other adornment. You're gonna flip it upside down, and there's the beautiful fruit, which is cooked underneath. So we're really looking forward to that recipe, and check back with us next week for our review and hopefully listener feedback as well.
I can't wait. Yes.
So now it's time to quickly talk about our first challenge of the Preheated Podcast. And since it's the season, and since we've both done this for several years now, I think, we are going to challenge our listeners and ourselves to making a batch of homemade eggnog.
Yes, I'm so excited. I actually did this as a challenge to myself when I first saw your husband post this, whenever it was, 3 or 4 years ago. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I've never even thought of making my own eggnog, much less aging it. So I was intrigued from the get-go when I first learned about this through you.
And you know, homemade eggnog is one of those things that store-bought commercial eggnog, there's absolutely no comparison. I am not a huge fan of the carton eggnog that appears mm-hmm. this time of year in stores. Mm-hmm. And so initially when my husband started making this, I thought, that's a nice project, but I think, you know, I'm not going to be interested. And it is one of my holiday favorites now. It is so delicious. And is a recipe we're going to post is from a Seattle place called Sun Liquor. And it uses a variety of liquors. And then it's a dairy and egg base. And eggnog is something that needs to age. So although we're starting this now, we're going to be checking in over the next coming weeks on its progress. It's going to sit in the back of the fridge for a few weeks. And then we'll check in and actually drink it. It'll be ready to drink in a few weeks' time. So we're just kicking that off now. And that's another recipe that will be on our website, preheatedpodcast.com, and also on our Facebook and Pinterest.
Yes. And we would love for you guys to go right alongside of us and make and age your own eggnog. I promise you it will not be a disappointment, and it's something really fun to either drink yourself or share with your friends and family when it comes to the holidays.
Yeah, it's a great holiday tradition, so kick it off now.
Well, the timer's buzzing, and we've got to go get to the dishes. Thanks for downloading Preheated this week. Join us next week as we continue our month of cakes with quick and easy snack cakes, crucial for keeping up your energy during this busy time of year and perfect for kids' lunchboxes. We'll also recap our upside-down cake experience and reminisce about some memorable baking fails, discuss what we're serving for Thanksgiving dessert as well. Our awesome theme music is by Anne-Marie Russell, featuring her talented brother Nathan Eklund on trumpet. You can find Anne-Marie's music on Amazon and iTunes or at annemarierussell.com. Remember, you can find us and our featured recipes on our website, preheatedpodcast.com, on Facebook, Pinterest, or download us on iTunes, where we'd love it if you'd subscribe to the show and give us a review, both of which will help other people find us. Until next time, thanks for listening and sweet dreams.